All right. Well, it's now my distinct pleasure to introduce our speaker tonight. So I'd like to tell you just a few things about Tammy. She has been sober since March 27th of last year, so she just celebrated a year back in March. She's been in consistent service to this group since her first days in our fellowship. She's also been an invaluable resource to us in our event, the Valley Speaker Series, which holds the Soberfest event and the Spring Into Sobriety event. And she's been able, because of her capability, her knowledge and expertise, she's been able to give us some very valuable guidance on the wisdom of holding these meetings either in person or remote. She has three beautiful daughters, and I can't wait to hear more about Tammy. So let's offer her a warm Tulare County welcome. And if you would, while she's speaking, please be free with your hands, giving her applause as you hear things that she liked, and we'll go from there. Here you go, Tammy. It's all you, babe.
Hi, guys. Thanks, Bill. That was very sweet of you. So it's weird to be here on the computer and not in person. So, and I've got my sidekick right here, my sponsor. So be patient if the wire, if the internet goes out, we'll be all joined in on my phone. Okay. Okay. All right. Okay, so as Bill said, I've been sober over a little over a year now, 412 days of continuous sobriety. Thank you. When Bill first asked me to come and to share my experience and strength and hope, I was super worried because I'm not always really high on the hope end, but it's getting better every day. So hopefully I'm just going to be really honest and transparent, and I'm not really good at citing the book and all that, but I'm just going to tell you how it was for me and how it is now. And I hope that somebody finds something in here that they can use and it'll help them along the way. So I grew up in an alcoholic home, every single one of us. I have a mom, a dad, and two sisters, and every single one of us is an alcoholic and an addict. And growing up, I drank before I even knew what alcohol was. My parents, the way they kind of handled us three kids was to give us alcohol to keep us quiet and keep things going the way that they wanted to. So as far back as I can remember, we had alcohol in our sippy cups, and we would go to the store every couple days. And my mom would be like, pick out your Kool-Aid and pick out your alcohol for the next couple days. So it was kind of weird, and I remember being a blackout drinker by the time I was 5 or 6. So large parts of my childhood I don't remember. I remember with my older sister, we got drunk in the front yard when we were like 6 and 7, and we got in trouble for that because you're supposed to get drunk in the backyard. So that was a lot of fun. But it was a very violent home. Lots of abuse of all kinds. The cops were there a lot. And then when my younger sister was born, she's 7 years younger than me, things started to get really, really bad. So when I was 12, I quit drinking for the first time because somebody had to be sober when the cops came. And back then, there wasn't really a CPS. As long as they came and somebody talked to the cops, they would leave once everybody quit fighting and everything. So I quit drinking when I was 12. Everybody else in my family kind of continued, and things got really, really crazy. And when I was 15, my dad said, okay, you're financially on your own now. So if you want to stay here, you need to pay rent. Otherwise, you can figure it out yourself. So I started working full time when I was 15. And I would either be at school or at work. And because, you know, I'm the child of alcoholics, I was the one that was, you know, the one that tried to be good, not get into trouble, not have anybody notice her. So I did really well in school. And I would go to school all week, and then I would work all weekend, and I'd come home, and the cops would always be at my house. And it's really weird. I knew everybody that drank. I think that a lot of people know my dad, if I would mention his name. He's a big drinker in this town still to this day. But what's weird is I never heard of AA at all. I never knew anybody who was in recovery, and I didn't even know that was an option. So things just continued. I went through high school. I graduated. I went to college here at COS in Visalia for a couple years, and then I moved up to Fresno to go to school there. And all this time I've been on my own financially. So I worked 3 jobs. I got through school. I didn't have time to do the normal partying. And of course I drank when I was younger, so I didn't really care. Like, going to a party, that's no big deal. I can do that at home. But when I got to college, it was really weird. When I got to Fresno State, my roommate, one of them was a football player for Fresno State. And so there's a lot of NFL players around all the time on the weekends. And we'd drink, and I could outdrink any NFL player there. And I was like, it never occurred to me that I should be getting drunk, because I had drank for so long when I was younger. So it was just like this little neat parlor trick I could do. Like, they'd be falling down drunk, and I'd still be awake. So, but it just went on, and I graduated, became a nurse, and I was working full time, bought a house, got married, had a baby. You know, life was just continuing on. My husband got transferred to LA, so we moved there when we had just the one child. And then we had my second daughter down in LA, and right after she was born, I knew that something was wrong, and she started getting sick right away. And she would get pneumonia like 12 times a year, and it was just very stressful. So I made the decision that I wanted to move home, because I'm thinking that my parents are going to help me out or something. And so we moved back to this area, and that was probably, in hindsight, like one of the worst things we could have done, because now I'm not only back in this area with my kids, you know, and a kid that's sick, but now I have my family that is still doing all the things that they've been doing, and even more so now. And we're all in one town for the first time in a really long time. So when I got back into town, my sisters were both using other substances. And, you know, I was really stressed out, and I just remember making a conscious decision to go ahead and do what I knew worked, you know. Growing up, that's how we handled everything. And so I just decided, you know, I can handle it. I always think that I know better than everybody. I think that I can control it. So so my sisters and I, you know, we used alcohol. We used other substances. The way we did it, because I'm a nurse, is we got a doctor involved, and that doctor eventually had to leave the area because he was in so much trouble with the FDA. So he left town. I ended up having my third daughter, and then one day, so I have the 3 kids. I'm going crazy trying to take care of my daughter that's sick all the time, and you know, now I'm struggling with substances and drinking and my parents. You know, it's just a big free-for-all. And my husband came home from work one day and said that he quit his job because it was too stressful, and he decided not to work anymore. So now I'm working full-time, and I need to work more than full-time to accommodate it, and using substances. And then I started getting sick, and it's funny because I went to doctors. Your body can't put up with that kind of stuff for very long. And so for me, what happened to me is I started getting pancreatitis. And the doctors, like I said, it took them a while to figure out, but it kept getting more often and more often. And finally, I ended up in the hospital up in Fresno, which is where I was working by then. I was in the hospital for a year without eating or anything while they tried to figure out what was going on. And of course, now, luckily for me, of course, I've got several doctors co-signing what I want to take, and they're just giving me massive amounts of everything. And my daughter is still sick, but now they figure out that what's wrong with her and what's wrong with me is actually genetic. And so for me, they say they have no idea why it turned on, but of course I know why. Because, you know, I was abusing my body pretty badly. So it gets to the point where they say, you know, you're not going to survive unless you have a transplant. And so it took them about a year to figure out what to do. I moved up to San Francisco, and I was at UCSF for several months. They did an experimental transplant. It's pretty hard to explain, but basically I don't have several organs that most people need to survive, and they tried to do some other things. And one of the side effects of the transplant was that they put me on even more medications than I had been on before. And then they sent me home and they said, you know, you can just wean yourself off when you figure it out, when you're feeling better. Well, okay, that's not going to happen because I'm an alcoholic and I'm an addict and I'm not going to take anything the way that they tell me I'm going to do it. So I went home and physically got better. And then I decided that about 7 months I needed to get back to work because nobody was working. So again, against what the doctors told me to do, I decided that I needed help. I mean, that was a good thing, deciding I needed help, but I decided to try going to rehab without telling my transplant doctor. So I did choose a place up in the Bay Area where which was at least close to the transplant center, but I chose a place that is one of those little mansion rehabs, which was totally inappropriate for the scope of the problem I had. But, you know, they were filming Love and Hip Hop there, and Dr. Phil was there, so it seemed like a good idea at the time. So there, you know, there's hot tubs and pools and everything, but what it ended up doing is trying to get off all the stuff I was on, and they didn't have a real doctor. He had lost his license, surprisingly, in Fresno, where I worked, for substances himself. I ended up rejecting my transplant, and I ended up back in the transplant center, and the doctor was furious, and he said, "Why did you do that?" And I said, "Well, because I need to get back to work. You know, all my ideas seem like a good idea because I don't take direction. I just do what I want." And so basically he said, "Well, if you figure it out, that's great. If not, you know, don't call me again." And he sent me home. But before he sent me home, he put me back on a bunch of narcotics because he said, you're not going to be able to handle it otherwise. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm better because I'm not on all the stuff that I was. So I went home. I never went to a meeting. I never contacted AA. I was at least exposed to AA in rehab that first time, but I was like, hey, I got it now. I got this together. I can function. So I went back to work, and surprisingly, you know, the medical field sanctions a lot of alcoholics and addicts to do what they do, which is surprising, I know, to a lot of people. But, you know, their view, and this is what's always gotten me in trouble, is if I can do my job and I can do it well, they're okay with whatever I have to do to show up. And so I continued to work, and what happens to me, my allergy and obsession with alcohol and substances, is that it doesn't make me feel relaxed and happy and you know, something I do to calm down. It's something I do to be able to work more than 100 hours a week. So when I put that stuff in my body, it makes me able, the way my body reacts to it, to, you know, work 36 hours straight and not take a break and not sleep. And, you know, my job was kind of okay with that as long as I didn't miss work. They didn't care what was going on. And so that continued for about a year and a half. And then, thank God, you know, I knew about God all my life, but he was always way off in a corner somewhere because I knew he was not okay with what I was doing. So I never talked to him about it. But obviously God stepped in because I could not do it for myself. And on my birthday, a little over a year ago, my Achilles ruptured at work. And so I physically couldn't walk, so I couldn't work. So they put me in a cast for 3 months. And so for 3 months, I was home with all my substances, and I just spiraled out of control. And by March, close to my sobriety date, one, I was physically a mess. Two, I had been like thrown out of every ER in the valley, and my pharmacist wouldn't talk to me anymore. And if I had had an idea of how to get stuff, I probably would have continued, but I guess I'm not that smart. So finally one day, March, you know, like right around March 24th, I, you know, I had tried everything. I had tried doing it on my own. I had tried quitting on my own. I tried not living anymore, but God, just that wasn't what he had in mind. So finally, for some reason that day, God, you know, it came to me like, why don't I just give up and admit I can't do this? And so for me, that was my surrender, that moment of, oh my God, you know what? I really can't do this. I need help. And so, that moment of clarity for me happened, that moment of surrender. And I realized, you know, I'm going to have to do what I have to do to get help. And so, I told my family, they were like, yeah, whatever, good luck. And I called my doctor and he said, I don't know what to tell you. So I just started calling people. And, the interesting thing, of course, is that by now, I don't have a pancreas anymore, so I'm not supposed to be drinking. That was one thing they told me when I woke up for my transplant, that maybe if they had mentioned before they did the transplant, it would have been a different decision, but I can never have alcohol again. But of course, I'm drinking anyway. I'm taking more medication than anybody in the whole wide world that I know of, and no rehab is willing to touch me to detox me. So I finally found a place down south in Orange County, and they said, you know, you're probably going to not live through the detox, but we'll give it a shot. And so I went down there, and there's one also God shot that there was a doctor, if anybody ever goes down to Orange County, Dr. Matt is his name. He was taking more than 2,000 pills a day. And if he hadn't gone before me through detox and lived, I don't think they would have accepted me. So shout out to him wherever he is. And I thanked him in person. But thank God he went first and he lived. And so then they went ahead. It was the worst detox ever. I mean, I've been through detox a couple times. It was not pretty. I was like the longest detox I'd ever had. But I got through it. And I was really, really lucky that I was surrounded by people in the medical facility who were actually in AA. And we had people come in, you know, H and I came in and helped me get going, like, you know, told me how to deal with the mental obsession that, you know, for months and for years, it had been every second of everything I thought about. And I thought, how is this ever going to get better? But, you know, they told me it's going to get better. You can pray about it. Maybe it'll make 5 seconds. You won't think about it. You know, and as time went on, it was like, hey, it's been an hour and I got better. And by the time I came home, so that was about 45 days, I came home and I went to outpatient in Fresno because I didn't really feel like I was ready to go to work and, you know, step into life again. I didn't feel ready. So I did about 45 days there too. And then I started, so when I came back in May, first thing I did was start going to meetings because I know last time that's what I didn't do, is that I didn't go to meetings. So I went to meetings the first day I came back, even though I didn't want to, and I went the next day and the next day, and I'm lucky that I met some of you who are on here right now who said, you know, come back tomorrow and come back again, and I did. And, you know, slowly, when I first heard the promises read to me at a meeting, I thought, well, I'm going to be the first person these promises do not work out for, and I really, truly believe that, but I had enough hope, just a little bit of hope, and I had a lot of willingness, but to give it a shot. And I'm just so thankful that I did, because I went through a couple sponsors, and then I finally found my sponsor, who I love very much, and we started working steps. And, you know, my life today doesn't look anything like I thought it would. It doesn't look like anything like it did a little over a year ago. Today I'm getting a divorce. I don't live with my kids anymore. I have a new job, which is a good thing. I just got promoted at work again, so now I'm doing well there. You know, everything completely has changed, and I may not be 100% happy with how much has changed yet, but it's for the right thing. It's the right thing to do. And it is getting better, and I do have hope that it is going to get better every day. And so, you know, for people who are in that situation of like, how am I ever going to get out of this? I've dug myself so far down, because I really did. I dug myself really far down. And, you know, I didn't have to go to an institution. I didn't ever get a DUI, but I'm going to tell you right now that the only reason I never did is because one, God was looking out for me. Two, I'm incredibly lucky. And three, you know, there's some professional courtesy that nurses get sometimes in the medical field with law enforcement personnel that they don't pull you over, because I definitely deserve to be pulled over a lot. I drove with my kids when I was high and when I was drunk. I put their lives at risk. I put my lives, I put all of your lives at risk. I worked when I was under the influence a lot. And I'm just super lucky that I never paid those consequences. But I know if I go back that I will, because I'm going to go right down as far as I did. So what is the one thing, I mean, that what worked? Obviously, it's reading the big book, and it's going through the steps. And, you know, I had seen this book before, but I kind of chose to think, I don't need it, I can do it without it, but you know what, I really can't. So I just want to talk briefly, I guess I talk fast, see, so it's going to be over soon anyway, about the steps for me. And for me, the step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. So for me, that happened that day when I finally decided that I was going to admit that I don't have this, I can't figure it out. Even though I may have worked places where we treated alcoholics, and I may have run group, and I may have done all those things, that I may know mentally what to do, but I can't do it. So for me, that was my step one. And then step two, for me, followed right after that, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. For me, as soon as I admitted, because I was lucky enough to have been exposed to a higher power when I was younger. I mean, it was obviously a very warped version of what I have my higher power as of now. Because God, when I was growing up, we went to church on Sunday, but we never talked about what was happening those 6 other days and all the secrets that we had. It was like God is there when you're dressed up, but he's not there any other time. So for me, step two was that, and then step three was saying, you know, that I'm not going to hide, and I'm not going to pretend that I am doing things that God is okay with, and I'm going to acknowledge that I do understand what God is. I do. And I am going to turn my will over to him, which is really hard for me because I like to take back my will. I always like to go with my own counsel. I like to make my own rules up and think that that's going to be okay. And it's just, it's not. So another big thing for me in this program has been learning to follow rules, not just the rules that I want to make up, and to do things as I've been instructed to do, not how I think it's better or I think it could be handled. And then step four, obviously, for me, step four came when I started working with my sponsor, the searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. So step four for me was hard as far as just confronting my role in a lot of the things that have happened. My family life that I grew up in was not great, but I made the choice when I was older. I made the choice when I was old enough to know, and I definitely helped other people get sicker by, you know, doing things that helping them get substances and saying it's okay and letting them turn me into a victim and just say, well, I can't do anything about it. This is how I have to respond. And then step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. So for me, I've been to lots of therapy in my life. I mean, when I started going to college, I started going to therapy, and always I would tell the therapist what was going on, and they would cancel their next appointment and be like, oh boy, we need to talk for a few hours. So every time, you know, I would start to tell somebody my story, they'd be like, oh my God, this is just crazy. So I was thankful for a sponsor who listened and didn't say, oh my God, I can't believe this, you need to get out of my house, you know, who was understanding and said, it's okay. You know, that was then, let's move on. So I'm thankful for that. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. To be honest, I've struggled with this one because some of my character defects are easier to let go of than others. And some of them, I think, I tell myself, hey, this makes me a better leader. It makes me a better worker. It makes me a better mom. And, you know, it really doesn't. And I think the key is that every job I've been in, I've worked in a lot of different places. I've probably worked in every hospital in this valley and some down south. You know, it always ends in the same problem, and that same problem is me, because that's how I respond to things. I make it about myself. I don't listen to other people's viewpoints. And so all those character defects that sometimes do admittedly make me good at what I do also, in the end, take my feet right out from under me. So this job is the first time learning to put away those character defects and try and do my job without doing that. So it's a challenge, and it's a process. So step 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. I feel like I do this every day repeatedly. Before I go to work, when I'm at work, all day. When I talk to my daughters, who are all teenagers now, yeah. And so for me, I'm on step 8 and 9, the amends process. And, you know, I'm taking my time with that one. I have a lot of people to make amends to. Right now, I'm not talking to anybody in my family. My sisters, my mom, my dad, none of them are talking to me. So, you know, and it's really easy for me to say, well, they're all still addicts and alcoholics, and I don't need to talk to them anyway, but I owe them amends. There's things that I did to them, for them, and in spite of them, that, you know, are really affecting my life that I need to get straight with. So for me, those are the things that I'm working on. And, you know, like I said, for the promises, not everything is like I want it right now. I want my daughters with me. I want, you know, that relationship that I thought we had before, I want that to be back, but that's just not where they're at. And so I'm learning to have hope, and that, you know, is my hope through this program, is that eventually, I don't know how long
the future. Yeah, you can have this. They say it works.
Kind of internet stuff. Anyway. Where I was going to end. So, anyway, that's all I got, Bill. Thank you.
Awesome. Right. So if anyone has any questions for Tammy, Tammy, thank you for doing that. I had never heard your story. Thank you so much. You're one of these. So yeah, if anyone has any questions, you can raise your hand and then we could, you know, unmute yourself and let's see.
Susie's got a question. Let's go to Susie.
Hi, Susie Alcoholic. Tammy, I miss you. It was so wonderful to hear from you and hear your story. And, it just really brought this sense of, a lot of emotions was going on with me listening to you. I really appreciate your honesty and your transparency. And I know that right now the promises are slowly revealing themselves, and you're right, it's a good thing, even going through the motions of pain and, you know, seeing that things are not exactly how we want them to be, you know, but it is also good to remind ourselves that God knows what he's doing, and he is working in the favor of our lives. So I believe that in my life, and I know that you do, so hang in there. With the challenges that you have going on right now. I'm so happy that I logged on today. I normally don't come to this meeting, but something told me to come on, and I'm so happy I did. You brought a lot of tears in my eyes hearing some of your story. It actually made me think back to when I was young, you know, and how I got introduced to AA. Something that I kind of put in the back of my mind, you know, I was I had gone through some issues in high school my freshman year, and you know, they sent me to do like community service, all kinds of stuff for that, and I had like a counseling I had to do as a 14-year-old, 13-year-old girl, and you know, I didn't take it serious because seeing the I didn't want to admit that I had an issue then, you know, and even as an adult, I didn't want to, and especially at such a young age, you know, and I didn't want to disclose anything about my father and his alcoholism. So I think I downplayed a lot of things, you know, and, but now looking back, it's like, man, you know, things happen for a reason. I'm glad to be in the program. I'm glad to be surrounded by strong women, especially like you and my sponsor, your sponsor, the community of women that I'm close to now. I feel so blessed. So thank you for your share tonight. Thank you, Bill, for asking her to share. And I hope everybody has a great evening. Thank you.
Thanks, Susie. If you have a question, please use the participants panel to raise your hand. Next, we have Lena. And Lena, if you want to go ahead and unmute yourself, we'd love to have your question.
Hi, Lena Alcoholic. Thank you so much for your share. It was very honest. I wanted to know what your 11-step meditation practice looks like.
The 11-step meditation, is that what you're talking about? So for me, when I was in down south, one of the nurses there who had struggled a lot himself with relapse taught me the 80, the page, 85, 86, and 87 for the morning and the evening, you know, in the big book, reading that. So for me, I get up, I know it's, because sometimes I have to be at work at 4 a.m., but I do get up 2 hours beforehand. For me, I need to, I do my readings. I have about 5 different books I read every morning. I read the big book, and then I pray a lot before I get started with my day. And, you know, I think that my sponsor taught me early on that whatever you're going to do that works, if it works, you keep doing it. And so for me, that's... That's what I do. Just sneeze on camera. anyway, so thank you for that question. But for me, it's really for me, I can't, I'm not good at meditating just, you know, free form or on my own. I really have to just go back to the big book every day and read. So that's what works for me. Thank you for your question.
Thanks, Lena. And next up, it looks like we've got Leah with a question. Go ahead and unmute yourself, Leah.
Hi, Tammy. I love you so much. I miss you. I wanted to ask you, do you have a favorite quote or a favorite reading or prayer or something from the big book that you have, like the favorite?
Hi, Leah. I love you too, and I love your baby, and I better get to hold her very soon. I'm going through withdrawal here. So I'm going to be super generic, but I'm going to be honest with you that the serenity prayer is something that I have to say several times a day. And I didn't really talk about what I do as a nurse, but what I do as a nurse since pretty much the beginning has involved a lot of death, and the death of children, the death of babies, the death of people. So one thing I always did, even before I knew what I was doing, was I would always try to center myself and pray before I went into a situation like that. And now I have the words to know exactly what that was in my heart before to say. It's because, and one thing I do is I like to take back the reins of my life all the time, and that gets me into trouble. So I know it's super generic, but honestly, it is the serenity prayer for me. That's how I kind of hang in there. Thank you, Leah. Love you.
Thanks for your question, Leah. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please use the participants panel to raise your hand. Tammy, I would be remiss if I didn't make a comment and maybe ask a question. You know, I think I met you really, really close to the end of March of last year. I remember you showing up, and I remember first thinking that you were a very, you struck me as a very confident seemingly self-aware person. But when I talked to you in some detail, I remember you kind of letting down your guard a little bit with me and letting me know that you felt that you were on shaky ground. And my question for you is, how did you know to trust somebody to make yourself vulnerable? And what was there anything or anyone who said something or did something that brought you to the conclusion that maybe you ought to try this whole sponsor step nonsense that all of us talk about?
Thank you, Bill. Thank you for saying nice things about me. That's really sweet. To be honest, when I went through the rehab the first time for that, not 2 weeks before I ended up in the hospital, they introduced us to steps, but it was just kind of like step work that you do. You write a paper, you get a little armband, you move up. So it didn't make any sense to me. And then when I went to rehab the second time and they talked a lot about these steps and your sponsor, and you had to have a sponsor before you could do this and you could do that, and it just seemed like it was going to be a hoop that I was going to jump through, to be honest. And then I got here, and, for me, being sober in a rehabilitation facility is super easy because they don't let you have 2 seconds to figure out anything else to do. And when I came back to Visalia, and, I think I've told a couple people, I felt like I was totally without a net out here. You know, I didn't have any family support. Nobody wanted me to go to AA. They just wanted me to go back to work and keep working. I came to the meetings because I knew last time that's what I did not do, and I did not stay sober. And so I came to the meetings, and I still was pretty unsure, to be honest. And I did go through a few sponsors. But I think that, honestly, meeting my sponsor and sitting down with her and talking and listening to her story, and I thought, she worked the steps, and they worked for her. And I was just desperate enough. I mean, I lost everything. I lost, my kids. I had lost my job. I had lost everything, my house, where I lived, that I was desperate enough to try it. And I may not have wholeheartedly gone into the steps at first, but you know what? My life started getting better, and everything everybody said would happen was happening. And I guess that's just what gave me enough trust. And people who reached out to me, and Bill, you're one of them, Tracy, all of you guys, and who checked on me when I have a hard time being vulnerable with people and telling them the truth, because I grew up lying about everything. And so it was super hard. It still is super hard. When you asked me to talk tonight, I thought, oh my God, I just really don't want to. But because it's really hard, I like to get, my sponsor tells me you need to get in a solution. I'd like to move past all of that stuff that was in the past. But that past is what's going to keep me from repeating all of those things. So I have to keep looking at them. So I guess I just was desperate enough, and I had a little bit of hope enough. And you know what? If I kept coming back, that hope has grown. And that's what's kept me here. So thank you for the question, Bill.
Hey, thanks for a great pitch tonight, Tammy. Appreciate you taking the questions as well. Justin, that's all the questions I've got, so back over to you, my friend.
All